Welcome to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can always stream us live from www.guardiantalkradio.com. That's from your computer, or maybe even your desktop if you're that old, like I am. And if you have a smartphone, which most do, then you can download the TuneIn app. And you can find Guardian Radio on that and listen to us all day long. So this evening, I have an international guest in the studio, but a Bahamian, because we know we like to big up all our people doing great things wherever they are in the world. And I'd love to welcome Wendy Coakley-Thompson to the show. Good evening, Wendy.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So, who are you? Why are you on our show?
Oh, wow. These existential questions.
I know, exactly.
I presume you want the Cliff Notes?
Cliff Notes.
Okay. Well, I'm a Bahamian-American, I guess, as like you. But I grew up here, and one of the reasons why I became a writer was, you know, when I tell young folks that there was actually a time where you only had three radio stations, there was no cable Bahamas, and we got our signal from Miami, and if the television wasn't clear, forget about it. So this is how I got interested in the world of books. And there was a progression from reading to writing. So, you know, nurtured the craft.
Which is great, because again, I always hear so often that Bahamians don't read. This is kind of, it's a sort of mantra that people say, but I'm not really sure it's totally true.
Yeah, well, you had me at hello. I think when I got my first book deal, and I'm skipping ahead, and the publisher was asking, what kinds of markets? And I was like, well, you know, Bahamian American, there's a big Bahamian diaspora, and people in the Bahamas would want to read the books. And you know, I was told we don't cater to that market. You know, people don't read. I was horrified. I was, you know, and a little offended. So, yeah, I don't believe that. I don't believe that.
And do you think that's anything to do? Because, again, what I've found and what I fight against so often with, you know, spreading, you know, the visual, Bahamian visual arts to the greater world is that there's this very facile idea of who we are as people from overseas and one that we've had a part in creating.
Right. I find
so do you think it's just an assumption that people make?
That Bahamians don't read. I think people make a lot of assumptions about Bahamians. You know, when I first left here at 17 to go to college, you should have heard some of the questions that I was asked. Do we wear grass skirts?
Do you live in mud?
Do you live in mud huts? And it was kind of like, okay, the Bahamas is like a 45-minute plane ride from Florida.
Yeah.
You know,
amazing how many people don't know that.
Yeah,
very often when I'm in Florida and I say, oh, yeah, it's like a half hour from here, they're like, what?
Right. Or they used to be like the booze boat in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, you could be in Miami for a day and just get liquored up. And
So where did you go to college?
I went to Montclair State College, now University, in Montclair, New Jersey, Upper Montclair, New Jersey. And was studying journalism. And I mean, I dug it. I also, you know, I think, too, one of the things that I got out of it was a cultural connection because, you know, I was American, but I grew up here, very Bahamian roots. You know, my mother has told the story of burying our umbilicus in Lewis Street.
Well, I mean, with a name like Coakley Thompson. I mean, I know where the Coakley house is on Lewis Street.
I'm on
Lewis Street very often.
Yes, the Coakleys of Lewis Street. So my mother's the Coakley, obviously. My dad was the Thompson. So hence the hyphenate. But I was Wendy Thompson from the Bahamas. So when I got to New Jersey, it was, first of all, it was kind of like landing on another planet. But also, too, I was just like, oh, okay, this is what being an American is like. So it was more of a, I guess, you know, like Margaret Mead minus the coconut bra.
Right.
Although people would have thought, oh, in the Bahamas you wear coconut bras.
I'm sure. Like, oh, listen, no. I've been asked if I ride a dolphin to work.
Oh,
I mean, you know,
me.
I swear to the Lord Almighty. But anyhow.
These fanciful notions. So in my writing, I try to show that there's a universality to all of our experiences. You know, look, we just happen to live in the Bahamas, you know. Particularly with writing about women and women of color. It's like our experiences are, you know, the sisterhood is real and the sisterhood is inclusive. So I try to stress that. And oh, by the way, there are palm trees.
Yeah.
And there's the ocean.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because I think, you know, no one questions why Shakespeare shouldn't be translated into 35 different languages. And that was a very specific time and a very specific place. I mean, the UK is nothing like France.
I mean,
and
like
it's funny how people understand the universality of the human condition when it's written by like white European men. But suddenly the universality of the human condition doesn't apply to people of the Caribbean or of color or right. of a different gender, and you're like, but we're still all human.
Yeah, it's really weird, but it's interesting that you did say that sometimes we're complicit, you know.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
The ads that people show, you mm-hmm. know, it's the sandals and, you know, this tourist aspect of living in the Bahamas or being of the Bahamas. And it's kind of like, no, we go to school, we, you know, hold down jobs, we parent our children, we, mm-hmm. you know.
And excel at different industries from tourism.
True.
You know, have people that are, you know, bioengineers and marine scientists mm-hmm. and architects and civil engineers and things that are really mm. quite complicated jobs.
Yes, and they're shocked. It's like they ran across an albino tiger and, mm-hmm. and you know, on mm-hmm. their porch, you know.
So was writing about the Bahamian experience something that was always, like, very important to your practice, or was it a part of a bigger practice?
Well, I would say it was part of, you know, the whole, the really, you know, tired mantras. They say writers write what they know, mm-hmm. you know, and this was something that I knew. Plus also, too, I think I was kind of hanging out with people who had a multi-culti, mm-hmm. you know, existence. This was New York, New Jersey, mm-hmm. you know, very cosmopolitan, very, mm-hmm. you know, the largest West Indian diasporas in Brooklyn, New York, mm-hmm. or one mm-hmm. of the largest. I, you know, mm-hmm. I don't want to be fact-checked. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, it was one of these things where in my writing, I didn't need to choose a side. Mm-hmm. I could be whatever I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And there was a group of people who could vibe with that, who could mm-hmm. understand mm-hmm. this, you know, multicultural, multi-contextual experience mm-hmm. and could code switch mm-hmm. you know right, just like right. how you were telling me when we were talking, you know, your daughter yeah. talks and says mummy, yeah. okay, so that's a code switch, you know,
exactly, yeah. mummy
yeah or I like a daddy,
yeah, exactly,
and when I hear a fella say daddy, I was like, oh yeah, you Bahamian,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so being able to write for an audience or that doesn't, for things don't lose in the translation, mm-hmm. and also to, you know, have a body of work for people who are intellectually curious, who want mm-hmm. to know more about the Bahamas than mm-hmm. what they see, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah,
on
yeah.
TV.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. Which is normally something either nefarious or drunken, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, it's either the touristy, and then I went in the 80s, so it was like, you know, everyone thought... drug dealers, and you know, so when they thought the Bahamas, they're like, oh, weed. I'm like, no, yeah, that's not the Bahamas, yeah, exactly. You know. So yeah, it was either this essentialist, colonized version of life in the Bahamas, or it was this, like, you know, druggy 80s Miami Vice version.
Yeah, exactly.
And so some people are intellectually lazy, you know, and they get one view of you, they think that that's you in totality, mm-hmm, when it's mm-hmm. not the case, you mm-hmm. know. Yeah, so it's been interesting.
So what was the first book you published?
The first book I published was Back to Life. And boy, talk about writing what you know. Mm-hmm. Well, kind of, sort of-ish, you know.
Yep.
Because the book is set in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. And there was a racially motivated murder in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. A group of Italian men.
I remember very well.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I was living in New York in the 80s.
Oh, right.
I'm that old. Yeah. Wow. I had my red suede Reeboks and get it, like a red furry Kangol. Okay,
oh, honey.
So I'm just saying.
Well, I was rocking the black girl mullet.
Yeah, okay, you know, yeah.
Just like, was it a business in the front, party in the back?
Yeah.
With the points, the yeah, Lisa points. Sure. So at that time, you yeah. know, when Yusef Hawkins was mm-hmm, shot to death, mm-hmm. I was in a relationship with an Italian-American mm-hmm. Man. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that, you know, Bensonhurst was predominantly Italian-American. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. You know, so mm-hmm. so I would say that my situation informed the book. But also, too, you know, I don't think it was a commentary on race relations, but it was also... you know, about the power of love, and mm-hmm. you know, it was kind of very Fox and Hound, but mm-hmm, mm-hmm, different mm-hmm. You know, milieu, and I just took to it. I felt too that there were other things at play. By the time that time I wrote the book, I felt very, I mean, obviously I felt Bahamian, but I felt very New Jersey of mm-hmm, New Jersey, you mm-hmm. know. I didn't talk like this, of course, you
yeah
know? But so I really was sensitive to that, you know, what I say in the book, when New York sneezes, New Jersey catches the cold, because
yeah,
a lot
yeah,
of that of fallout
course.
Came
yeah.
across the river. So that was a statement I wanted to make. And, you know, I mean, I think later I felt, oh, I made that statement. So it was a confluence of things that were important to me and, mm-hmm. and a couple of statements that I wanted to make. So it was initially a screenplay, mm-hmm. and I wrote it when I was at Syracuse
University.
And then
Spike
University.
Lee just had to go and make do, you know, do the right thing.
Yes, it came out around the time.
Yeah,
the
I'm
kid
sure,
got
of course.
Shot,
yeah,
you know?
yeah.
So wrote this screenplay. My sister at the time knew someone, you know, someone who worked with William Morris. So she said, and he was very Hollywood. He's like, I'm going in the tunnel. I can't hear you. Just totally fake. $3 fake, you know, but Hollywood, like,
So
sent him the script. You know, when you send a script in, they do coverage. And I mean, the coverage came back and it was, you would have sworn I ran over this person's dog, stole money out of their wallet.
Oh, wow.
You know? Yeah. So I said, well, let me go back to what
so
I
So just
know.
For the audience, they might not know coverage. Is when someone basically kind of writes a one pager,
sort
of a summary and a viewpoint.
Yes,
like, yes, we should make it. No, we shouldn't make it. Or yes, is that an audience or not? So
they pretty much, it was a one page bullet to the heart, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it kind of helped me go back to what I knew, which was writing. So I took the script and made it a novel. And I thought that it starting out as a script helped me to keep the word economy down, because sometimes you write it can be very Dickensian.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So. It became a novel. I dug it. And then initially I had self-published it because, you know, publishing is very old boy.
Extremely tough.
You waspy, you know.
Yeah.
So at
the
time.
Jackie O being like the, you're
oh,
right.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
she
editor.
Kind of. Yeah, exactly. She sort of represents, she's a perfect icon for, in a way, what the publishing industry is.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, they've tried to, you know, be more diverse, but now they're going back to, I think Miley Cyrus has a book out, just like, can I color it? I know, I'm sorry. That was very estrogen.
You can be free on this show.
I love Miley. I came out like a wrecking ball. I love her, but really, not something I want to add to.
Well, it's actually really interesting. I have a friend who, a white male friend who lives actually in South Africa. He's actually not South African, but anyhow. And we were talking recently, and he said, you know, I decided as an exercise that this year I would read only, he said, I want to try to deprogram. I realize that I've just grown up, and my own brain is programmed, and I want to deprogram myself, because even though I think I'm a very decent human being and I've never mistreated a woman, who knows? Because behavior I think is acceptable.
Know.
So he said, I've decided for a year that I'm going to only read literature or anything written by a woman. And he said, and now I realize when I'm in an airport bookshop how hard it is to find something. And either I've read it all already because I've made this commitment to myself. And but he said, there's so little on offering comparatively. And he's like, I've suddenly realized, like, putting myself into the position of being, you know, a reader of, you know, fiction or nonfiction written by a woman. He's like, that what a, you know, and he said, I never really realized before. And I thought that was, you know, so powerful. And also that he was doing that exercise, I felt was so powerful.
He's very evolved, yeah.
Very, like, super evolved, and probably doesn't need to do the exercise because he's already that evolved. But anyhow.
The fact that he did the exercise.
But you know, that he said, you know, I've only just, because, you know, I've been really looking for it, and I can't find it.
Yeah. Well, you know, going through, because I just came here yesterday, it's interesting that you would say that. You know, you go through the, and they at Syracuse, they call them DWEM, the dead white European males, you know, and then the white women call them that, you know. So there was that, and then I find that, you know, you have the usual emissaries, like you have your J.K. Rowlings, you have your
Jane Austen,
yes,
the Bronte sisters,
Maeve Binchy, you know, I'm thinking more of contemporary.
Maeve Binchy, sure.
So for black folks, is Attica Locke, Chimamanda, you know, I can't pronounce her surname. So you have, you know, the emissaries, and other than that, everyone gets lost. So hard to find your voice, you know.
Well, so I think we're going to talk a little bit more about that after the break, about your experience with publishing. I know you didn't have a great experience, and that led you, in fact, to create your own publishing house, which is really why we're here.
Yes.
to talk about Duo Books, and which is a publishing house for publishing Bahamian writers.
Yes.
And so we'll talk more about that after the break. I have Wendy Coakley Thompson in the studio with me this evening, and we are having an excellent time, even though we're speaking about difficult topics and, you know, the difficulty of publishing, the difficulty of being a woman, a woman writer, and then a woman of color on top of that, and specifically what it is to be a writer, like, from the Caribbean and from the Bahamas in particular. So you are listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after